Good evening, everyone. I'm broadcasting live April 7th. Today's quote has actually got quite a bit in it, even though it's a simple message. This is from the Iti Uttaka. The Buddha says, even should one saṅkhātikarṇe jepi bhikkhave, even if one should the corner of my robe gahitvā grasp, take hold of, even if one having taken hold of the corner of my robe pitthito pitthito anubandho asa, should follow after me, pitido, pitido, follow behind my back, like one after the other. Pade, pade, padang, pade, padang, nikipanto. Stepping in my footsteps. Putting down his feet in my footsteps. So literally getting about, just about as close as he could to the Buddha, following him everywhere. So chahoti, and if he is abhijalu, with craving, with great desires, full of desire. Tibasarago, kamesu tibasarago, with sharp, extreme lust for sensuality. Vyapannacitto, with a mind full of ill will, a mind of ill will, angry at other people, hating other people, with only bitter thoughts for others. Padutta manasankapo, corrupted, with corrupted mental formations, so thoughts that are corrupted, thinking to harm others and to manipulate others and to oppress and abuse others. Mutta sati, with confused mindfulness, confused recognition, the reaction, reacting to things in a confused way, without wisdom, without clarity. When things arise, reacting based on dark, like being in the dark, based on habit, based on ignorance. So it gives rise to greed and anger. Asampajano, without full comprehension. A, without sang, full. Well, sang is like comprehensive. Pa is full. Ja is knowledge. Without full knowledge. Asamahito, without concentration or focus, without level-headed. So disturbed, if their mind is not impartial, objective, able to see things as they are. As I said, there's a lot in here because it looks like a simple quote, but each of these words has a very important meaning to them. Vibhanta citto, what does that mean? It's just more desire, no? Vibhanta. A wandering mind, confused mind, vibhanta, vibhamati, to roam, to stray, vibhanta, with a wandering mind, the mind that doesn't stay focused, mind that goes hither and thither thinking about this and that. Pakatindriyo, with unguarded, untrained, sort of run-of-the-mill, maybe it doesn't mean that, but pakatim can mean ordinary, but here it means unguarded or untrained senses. So the senses are our doors by which we experience things. But the problem is we don't just experience things, we react to them. Right? So this is untrained. We are based on habit and memory and experience. We react to every little thing in a very specific way that often is a cause for great suffering for us and others, a cause for bad karma. So all of these things, so this, imagine this person holding on to the Buddha's coattails, so to speak, walking in his footsteps, but he's got all these things, he's full of greed, has many, many desires, has craving or lust for sensuality, has ill will, has a corrupted thought, mental activity. He's confused. Is with a muddled awareness, without comprehension and understanding, without focus or samahito, without this kind of balanced, calm mind. Vibhanta citto, with wandering mind and with untrained faculties. So what about him? What about her? Atakoso arakkava. Such a person, well, such a person, arakkava maihang, is very far from me. Maihang, to me. I say far away from me. Is as though very far from me. Ahanchatasa. And me from him or her. Dangisa hetu, what's the cause of that? Tamanhi so bhikkave bhikkhu na pasati. For the Dhamma bhikkhus, that bhikkhu, that monk, doesn't see. They don't see the Dhamma. Dhammang apasanto namang pasati. Not seeing the Dhamma, they don't see me. So the meaning here is that, in two ways, having all those things is a sign, of course, of not seeing the Dhamma. It's really sort of the definition of not seeing the Dhamma, because seeing the Dhamma is to see things as they are. And to live life impartially, objectively, wisely. And all of these things are not that. But also a way of explaining it is that these things stop us from seeing truth. These get in the way. You can't see the Dhamma if you have all of these things. Maybe you live with the Buddha. This is why Ajahn Tong said, my teacher said, because he's very famous, you know, in Thailand, or he's fairly famous in Thailand, and I guess now he's very, very famous, but everyone coming to visit him, thousands of people on his birthday just pouring in, and so he said, well, going to see noble people, going to live with them, or you know, even wait on them, or care for them, or you know, attend to them as their student and as their attendant. It's not the same as becoming a noble one yourself. It's a simple thing to say, but it's one of those quotes that so got published and passed around. So this is an important quote and an important sort of teaching in the context of religion, because a lot of people end up doing that. They think that by associating with good people, that's enough. And, you know, the Buddha did say that associating with good people is the whole of the holy life. But the thing about it is that wise people tend to say things like this. They say, you know, look, it's not about following me around, it's about changing yourself. And of course, the great thing about associating with wise people is that they teach these things. They push you to become a better person. They don't let you walk around holding on to their robes. And then there's the idea about being far and being near to the Buddha, which kind of has greater implications in terms of the idea of space, you know, and idea of reality, the concepts of reality. What is real? We think of we think of space as being important, location being important, when in fact it's really just a part of the impression that we have of things. Someone on Facebook today, an old friend from high school, he posted, he said, what was it? There's nothing wrong with my brain. The anxiety I'm experiencing is just a reflection of all the things that are messed up in the world. And I replied and I said, the problem is that the world is all in your brain. Because it's really true, you know, I mean, it's not even in the mind. The mind gets everything from the brain, which projects everything and creates things. Like they did a study that said when you look at something, you don't look at the whole object. So we think in the room around us there's all these objects that we're seeing, but in fact we only see very small bits of it. We only see enough to be able to create the picture in our minds. And they did studies that they did tests on people that they were able to trick them into not being able to see something on the pictures. They changed something, but you couldn't see it because you weren't actually seeing the picture. You weren't actually seeing. The light was only the impetus or the spark that then the instigation, I guess, that leads the mind to create the image. Anyway, the point and how that relates is the world is really all in our heads, all in our minds, I guess you have to say. And so this is how, I mean, this kind of a theory, right? Some people would challenge it and say that's not true. The world does exist out there, whether we experience it or not. But under this theory, you know, the idea of the mind being primary. This is how the whole idea of rebirth and karma works, because we create these experiences, we create these existences, and so it's how we understand our relationships with others, why we're brought into contact with the people around us, people who we meet in life. It's because we see this, we see with them, or we see them, we see in the same way as them. And so to be close to the Buddha, the only way to be close to the Buddha is to see in the way he sees, to see things the way he sees them. Because the way you see things, the way you look at things, the way you react to things, that's the whole of who you are. That's what makes you who you are. It's what determines your life, your future. So really that's all we're doing in meditation, is learning to see things the way the Buddha saw things, which is as they are. Why we call him the Buddha is because he awoke to things as they are, or he came to understand things as they are. We claim that we don't see things as they are, we react to them. I mean, we see things as they are, of course, but we do much more than that. As soon as you see something as it is, you get lost in how you want it to be or how you want it not to be. What you think of it, what it makes you think of, caught in the past, future, not seeing things as they are. Because we don't see that, we can't see the Buddha. It's like very far from the Buddha, whether we're right next to him. And then he says, Yojana sate chepiso bhikkhuve bhikkhu viharaya. Suppose a bhikkhu monk, oh monk, suppose there was a monk living 100 yojana, just like a league, 100 yojana is like 16 kilometers or something, I don't know. 100 yojana, 100 far distances. Soja hoti, and then he is not any of those things. So it's anabijalu, not with many desires. Kame su nati basarago. Actually, I'm not sure which one the kame su goes with. Anabijalu kame su. Maybe it's that way. Not with many desires in regards. No, I think it's the other way. Kame sunati basarago. Not with sharp lust, with strong lust in regards to sensuality. Abhyapanna citto. Without ill will. Apadurthamana sankapo. With uncorrupted mental formations. Upartita sati. With established mindfulness. With a mind that is able to grasp things. You know, the way of grasping, the way you say in English, we use the word grasp in two ways. Because if you grasp something, it means you understand it. Not like grasping something, like grasping onto something or grasping for something. Grasping in general. When you grasp something means you understand it. And that's what we do in the meditation. Every moment trying to grasp it, just for a moment. Just grasp that seeing. And you grasp it and you say, ah yes, that's seeing. Instead of saying that's good, that's bad, that's me, that's mine. And so on. Sampajano, fully comprehending or full awareness, full knowledge, full and right knowledge. Samahito, well balanced or well focused. Ekaggacitto, with a one-pointed mind. Sanghutindriyo, with trained and restrained senses. Atakoso santikeva mayhang. That person is as though in my presence. Ahanchatasa. And me in his. Tangisa hetu, which is the cause. Tamang hiso bhikkhave bhikkhu pasati. For that monk sees the Dhamma. Dhammang pasanto mang pasati. Seeing the Dhamma, he sees me. There you go. That's the Dhamma for tonight. Does anyone have any questions? I think I won't make you come on the hangout. We'll go back to text questions. You know what I was thinking? What we could do is, instead of like doing questions and videos about their answers, is we could set up some kind of page where people could vote on topics and just like one word topics, and do a video on this, and people could vote on it. And I could do a video on certain topics. Maybe that would work well. Someone has to make such a page. If there's any questions, I'll take text questions tonight. At meditation.sirimangalo.org, those of you over at YouTube. You have to find our meditation page. And they have to be live, unfortunately. I'm not going to go digging back through the past chat and find dead comments. About New York, huh? Well, I posted some events on Facebook. So I shared some events that were shared with me. So I think that's what you gotta do, is go to those events. Let me see. There's a April 16th event at Rockaway Beach. 90-16 Rockaway Beach Boulevard. Wait, 11693 Rockaway Beach, Queens. It's at 3 p.m. on April 16th. I don't know. I mean, I'm just getting these as you guys are, so. I didn't plan any of this. And then I'm doing a neon meditation. 7 p.m. at Light Bright Neon, 232 3rd Street. Number C-102, Brooklyn. That's April 19th, 7 p.m. I think like 16th and 17th, 17th and 18th, there's other stuff that I'm not actually the teacher all these days. I don't know, because these are the only ones I got. 16th, 19th, and the 20th, I don't know, but the 21st... that's Dharma Punks, I think. No? Maybe. Yeah, Dharma Punks in Manhattan. Don't know, you have to find the Dharma Punks place. Lila Yoga, Dharma, and Wellness. That's the place, I think. And then April 22nd. Fort Greene, Brooklyn. The Lucky Lotus Yoga and Vegan Cafe. These are all on my page now, so you can go look at them. How is the mind so powerful and yet so, I think you're trying to say naive? Naive is not spelt that way, but that's okay. I think you're saying naive. Well, powerful doesn't mean that it's in control of the power, right? The mind is not in control of its own power. That's really the problem. And powerful doesn't mean good. So the mind ends up, I mean, the mind can be very wise, no? And the mind can be very smart, clever, and so on. But it can also be very naive, so it twists itself up and ends up creating its own, creating problems for itself, because it has no direction. What the mind lacks is training. Training is a very specific thing. The mind that is just going randomly is very unlikely to even think about training itself. As a result, you see that most of us don't think of training ourselves. I mean, I really didn't. I went to Asia looking for wisdom, looking for insight, but didn't think I'd have to work for it. Most people don't. Most people who come to meditate don't even think of it as work. They think, yeah, meditation, that'll, you know, be like a pill I can swallow, and I'll just be, I'll sit down on my mat and poof, I'll be happy, right? And they're like, oh crap, this is tough. A lot of people don't like the meditation that I teach when I first teach it. You can't teach this to everyone. Not everyone's going to appreciate it. I'm sure that'll be the case in New York. There'll be many people who are not very happy about what I'm teaching. I mean, they won't say it, but it won't stick with most people. So people want comfort. They want an escape. It's hard to get people to grow up and learn to look at their problems. That's maybe harsh language, but don't take that too hard, and let's not be too critical, but it really is the case. I'm not, you know, condescending or looking down on such people. I mean, I was the same, and we're all in this position where we have to grow up. You know, we have to start really taking the bull by the horns and stop running away and stop fooling ourselves. And that we're going to be able to just ignore the problems or we're going to escape our problems. And we have to really, you know, facing your problems is the hardest thing. Anyway, kind of went off on a tangent there, but the mind is just complex, I suppose. And as a result, it kind of does it to itself. Right, and it's like the ocean is powerful, I suppose you could say, but most of the time the ocean doesn't do anything. You say the ocean is powerful, what the heck does that mean? You go to the ocean, it's not doing anything powerful, right? But then you have a tsunami, right? Or you have a hurricane, and then you see the power of the ocean. But when the ocean is in its natural state, the mind in its natural state is diffuse. It's full of contradictions that use up all its energy. So if you, when you train your mind, you have all this energy that's very powerful, but you have to concentrate it. I'm not sure if you're an English native speaker, but the words grow up in English, it's an idiom. It doesn't mean get older. It means stop being juvenile, stop being immature. It has nothing to do with age. Grow up means stop being immature. Anyway, if that's all, I'll say goodnight. I've still got stuff. This Sunday we're having a storytelling, and some of you know about this storytelling thing we're having on Sunday at the Spectator Auditorium. If any of you are local, you're welcome to come on over. I'll be telling a story from the Jataka about a bird. It's the one I told in Second Life recently, I think. It's about a bird bird that stays by its tree, stays in its tree even after the tree kind of dries up, dies. And it stays there out of gratitude to the tree. The story, the event is about relating religion to the environment, because there's the issues of climate change. So it's how do our religions relate and deal with climate change, or relate to the environment and protection of the environment. So the moral of this story is about contentment, really, which is Buddhism's probably the best way that Buddhism relates to environmental protection and so on, is not being greedy and not taking more than is appropriate, that kind of thing. Not going to seek out and also to be appreciative. So the idea of appreciating the environment, this bird stays with the tree and appreciates it, and is content with it. So the Buddha tells the story to a monk who gets kind of upset because a village burns down. So he's staying in, depending on this village, for the rains retreat, and the village burnt down, I think, and so it was very hard for him to get food. And so he told this to the Buddha, and the Buddha said, oh, you know, don't just go by food. Food isn't a good indicator. When you get the requisites, that's not a good indicator of what a good place is. If you can meditate well there, you should stay there. And then he told the story of this bird that stayed with this tree because it was content even when the tree died. Anyway, it's a little bit longer than that. You have to hear me tell the story, but it's just a simple thing. So I got to prepare for that kind of, and then I got two exams next week, and then I'm done, and then off to New York. And then it's already almost May, and then in May we've got one event, the Buddha's birthday in Mississauga. And then in June I'm off to Asia for a month. And then back here for the rains. Lots of people interested in coming to meditate all the way into like November, which is a bit awkward because I can't think that far ahead. I mean, because in the past I've had trouble thinking far ahead, now it seems pretty stable, so maybe we can start tentatively accepting long-term reservations. I'm just hesitant to do so because plans change, the future is uncertain. I could end up moving back to Asia or something. Not likely. But I think we can start to be a little more accepting of future plans of this sort these days. But we maybe need a bigger place. Maybe we have to start thinking about finding a bigger house in the area. I know it's not nice to have to move, but this house really isn't. I mean, it's fairly big, it's just not well laid out for a meditation center. There are houses in close to the university that have like 6 bedrooms because they were built and they were renovated to house students. So you're trying to fit as many students in a house as you can, which, you know, kind of fits our situation. We got 6-bedroom houses that are, you know, fairly reasonable. We should maybe talk about that anyway. Anyway, that's all for tonight. Thank you guys. Thanks for coming out. Have a good night.